From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of June 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, Brazilian officials, despite a deal already struck, are steadfastly opposing the cotton GSM 102 program. The EU has decided to let member countries make their own decisions about whether or not to let farmers plant genetically modified crops, and a new round of climate talks has ended in mostly criticism and not much action. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then in the second half hour of our program on some of these stations and always online at willag.org, we'll talk with Tom Sell of the Crop Insurance Professionals Association. They have a whole lot to say about the final draft of the SRA released last week and what impact it will have on them and you, that is, if you're a farmer. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July soft red winter wheat at 451.5, 10 and 3 quarters higher. September at 467.5, up 10.5, and December futures at 494, 8.5 cents higher. July hard red in Kansas City at $4.79.5, up 12.5 cents for the day. July corn futures 353.75, up 4.25. September at 363, up 4. December 375, 4 cents higher. The March at 388.25, up 4 on the afternoon. May corn 397.25, up 4 cents. From the soy complex, nearby July beans $9.51.5, 5.25 higher. August at 936.25, up 7 cents for the day. September at 920.25, up 9.5. And November beans 916.25, up 7 cents. January at 926.5, up 7. July bean meal futures at 290, 30 cents higher. July bean oil at 37.39, up 49 cents. June live cattle futures 89.77.5, up 27.5. The August at 88.12.5, up 85 cents. August feeders at 110.42.5, 35 higher. September at 110.42.5 as well, 57.5 cents higher there. And the June lean hogs at $77.92.5, a gain of 15 cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, July contract, $75.21 a barrel, up $1.43. July ethanol at $1.59.7, settlement price there, a penny and a tenth higher. Natural gas at $5.03.8, up 25.7, and the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.02.8, up 2.3. Gold futures for the afternoon currently trading at $1,223.30, the settlement price down $5.60, and the Dow now at 10,260 is just about 50 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 86.514 is up 0.99, and the CRB index at 259.98 is 4.0 higher on the afternoon. Here's a bit for the Midwestern weather forecast. Too much rain, of course, has fallen over the weekend in many portions of the Midwest. Rain will fall additionally into Wednesday with some locally heavy amounts likely. Warm and humid weather will dominate the next 10 days. Soft winter wheat quality, that'll continue to decline. Drier weather, though, there is a must. And it doesn't look like it's going to come quick enough to many of these areas to stop that decline as disease progresses through the soft red winter wheat crop. The jet stream will lift to the north later this week and into the weekend. That'll shift the greatest rain areas to the north, especially in Iowa, northern Illinois, northern Indiana, and the northern part of Ohio. The wind speeds will be supportive if you want to get out there and spray, and you can get out, but there will be not much sunshine before that process can really take off. Late season planting will advance better later this week as the rainfall begins to lighten up. We'll have a complete look at the agriculture weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. On the phone line with us, not Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, but Pete Manhart. Kurt is away this afternoon and out of the office. Pete graciously joining us from that office. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
Good.
Oop, are you still? Oh, there you are. Hey, tell me about this marketplace just a bit. Pete, as you look at what happened in the wheat, are you still with me, Pete? Oh, I think I hung up on him by accident. Well, we'll get back to him momentarily, and we'll have Pete Manhart with us at that point.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, now let's give it a shot and see whether Pete Manhart is there. Good afternoon to you, Pete. How are you doing today? I'm surprised he's not with us. Pete, are you with me this afternoon? Well, that's unusual. I don't know exactly why Pete's not there, but he's not, so we'll try something else. I'll tell you what, we'll come back in just a bit and we'll talk to Pete. But first, let me remind you that you're listening to willag.org. That's willag.org. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon. At that point, and what else will happen? Oh, in the second half hour of this program, actually a pretty important program you might want to stay and listen to, because at that point, we'll be talking with the folks at the Crop Insurance Professionals Association in Washington, D.C. Their spokesman, Tom Sell, will join us. Tom will talk to us about the SRA that USDA released last week. That's the way the crop insurance folks get paid, and it will have a really big impact on what types of programming, crop insurance programs, that you might be able to receive. They're taking a lot of money out of that system, and it might make a difference to you. So stay with us, and we'll get things all straightened out here momentarily. Dave's here now with the Ag News for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Brazilian officials are continuing to insist the United States alter its GSM-102 export credit guarantee program as an interim step necessary for Brazil to continue to postpone imposition of retaliatory tariffs on a wide range of U.S. products and services. Specifically, Brazil is insisting that the United States shorten the GSM-102 loan period and hike loan interest rates. The changes likely would apply not just to cotton sold under the program, but to all U.S. agricultural commodities that are exported with the benefit of the GSM-102 subsidy. Brazil has threatened to retaliate, a step that has been sanctioned by the World Trade Organization if an agreement is not reached by June 21st. European regulators plan to turn an official blind eye to countries that want to earmark farmland as free of genetically engineered crops, hoping to end years of stalemate and division over biotech policy. The draft legal proposals authorized by the European Commission would allow significant leeway for countries to set up GE-free regions as a way to keep conventional and organic crops away from nearby biotech plantings. The proposals will be presented to the EU governments in mid-July, and two EU governments, France and Spain, have already indicated they'll resist them. A new round of climate talks late last week ended with rich and poor countries both sharply criticizing a new text meant to pave the way toward a deal to halt global warming. Negotiators from 185 countries tried to revive efforts for a global treaty to fight climate change after the disappointing UN summit in Copenhagen in December. More than 70 pro-democracy, anti-Castro Cuban leaders have signed a letter urging Congress to pass House Agriculture Committee Chairman Collin Peterson's bipartisan bill to end the U.S. ban on travel to Cuba and to ease U.S. agricultural exports. Peterson has not held a markup on his bill. Sources have said that Peterson has had a hard time getting a clear majority of his committee to support the measure because some members have accepted campaign donations from Cuban-oriented political action committees. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, farmers using glyphosate in a tank mix this season may need to swap out their spray nozzles. Glyphosate is a translocated herbicide. That means as long as you get a little on the leaf surface, the plant will absorb it and then move it to the root where it kills. It's been very effective, but today some weeds aren't as responsive to glyphosate as they used to be, and farmers are having to tank mix it with other herbicides. Well, this means more than you might think to the application process. Aaron Hager is a weed scientist at the University of Illinois.
The thing that we're still unclear of in many of these tank mixes would be, again, the question of nozzle selection. You know, glyphosate being a very translocated product where complete coverage of target vegetation is not as critical as it is with things like diphenyl ethers that are much more contact in nature. So any type of nozzle that can ensure good overall coverage, especially when farmers are doing these tank mix combinations, are going to end up giving overall better control of some of these resistant biotypes, where, say, for example, the diphenyl ether component of a tank mix is the one that you're going to have to rely on to control that.
That, in the case of resistant weed biotypes in Illinois, means mare's tail, sometimes known as horseweed, and water hemp. It is causing farmers to adapt their weed control plans.
You know, if you make that transition away from glyphosate alone, keep in mind, you know, if you've still got the same type of nozzles producing the very large droplets that are less prone to drift, these types of things, usually, again, very good for translocated products, but perhaps not in every type of nozzle would be equally as effective for coverage with contact materials.
Glyphosate kills most everything, and the nozzles used to apply it are set to create great big droplets. This keeps the herbicide from drifting off target. On the flip side, the contact killers need to have lots of contact with the weeds in the field canopy. Smaller droplets let them drift into places the bigger droplets miss. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of the Normal, Illinois office should be on the line with us now to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, thank you so much for being with us and for filling in for Kurt Kimmel today. Tell me about this marketplace. There was kind of a nice little jump in the wheat bit, and oats were up 20 cents, too.
Yeah, the oats are and wheat leading it. Canada isn't going to get a lot of theirs planted. Worried about our wheat getting harvested before it's the quality goes down due to all the rains. So those are two big factors. Canada also isn't going to get a lot of their other stuff planted. 8 to 12 million acres maybe not planted, and that canola not being planted will help the beans along. And as we saw today, the wheat and the beans led things and drug corn along with it.
Have you talked to many of your customers that actually have, for instance, soft red or maybe some hard red winter wheat, and are they just seeing the disease develop?
And right here in this part of the countryside, very little wheat got planted. So our people that do have wheat are clear out west, and they are seeing disease come in just due to the wetness.
And then you couple that with what's happening in Canada, and that should push the marketplace higher. Do you think it'll be enough to really put spurs into the corn market eventually?
I think that it's already dragged the corn market 15 to 20 cents. I don't know if you can drag it more than another dime right now with the wheat. Worldwide, wheat supplies are abundant. It's just that our supplies here were tight due to not planting as many acres. So I think eventually that will not be able to drag corn as far as some people think.
And then what are you watching otherwise in the marketplace?
We're still watching the weather totally. Where are we going to be planted at today on beans? There's still a lot of beans to be planted around in places, and we have no second crop wheat beans after wheat because we just didn't plant as much wheat. Also then Europe and the financial mess right now today, everything was okay in Europe. When that isn't okay, that tends to push things back lower.
I talked to my brothers or my dad over the weekend, talked a little bit about replant of beans. Of course, replant now may be washed out again. You've heard much about that?
A replant where it needs it needs to be done. I've still got guys that have only got half their beans planted in places. Over the weekend, I had 3/10. One of the guys in the office had 2.7 inches. Mm-hmm. So it's been really spotty, and it seems like where it's raining is where they still need to replant or still need to plant first crop beans.
My dad said he had 3.25 there on the home place in Logan County, so the rainfall has come. What about the livestock side?
Livestock side, we're still hoping that the cattle and hogs can both rebound upward. We did have some pretty good prices that they backed off from, but again, right now, economic-wise, we're talking good things, and that helps those up. When we talk bad economic times, it pushes those right back down.
Okay, thanks so much, and thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Pete Manhart. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Now let's take a look at the cash grain market. Greg Johnson of the Andersons is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's been a fun afternoon on the radio station today.
Sounds like you're having all kinds of problems.
You just settle in and you go with the flow, baby. It's a good thing some of this is on CD and I can hit a button that actually works from time to time. Okay, so tell me about the marketplace, what you've got going. Have farmers seen that extra 15 cents as something they like, or, well, they like, but enough to make sales?
I think we need another 10 or 15 cents. We lost an awful lot. We have not seen the 15-cent rally from Thursday and Friday and today translate into any substantial amount of farmer selling, but we're getting close. I would say another 10 or 15 cents on top of that. If China continues to buy corn, if the dollar stays weak, if the oil continues to go higher, depending on how many acres show unplanted on beans with this afternoon's USDA report. All those things are potentially friendly, but the bottom line, too, is rain makes grain. And, you know, yes, there is too much rain in some places, but we don't want to lose sight of the fact that you know, the crop is off to a good start, and we usually don't have rallies because of too wet a weather. We usually have rallies because of too dry of weather. So I don't want to get extremely bullish, but I think we can, you know, gain a little bit more yet before we run into some trouble.
Did you listen to Commodity Week?
No, I haven't heard it yet. I plan on listening to it.
They were feeling their oats, and I mean that literally, I think, too.
Led by the oats.
Yeah, well, they were feeling their oats, and they thought things might not be too terribly bad, and Zwicker was thinking that things could move.
Well,
hindsight.
China is a big unknown. If you look back to when the 1 year other than this year when they bought corn, I mean, the market really moved a lot. And China is a big country. If they do decide to buy corn, who's to say, you know, they've bought 11 boatloads already. Who's to say they don't buy another 11 or 20 boatloads, you know, before it's all said and done. So that's a big wild card. And I don't think people want to get too short. Traders don't want to get too short ahead of that, you know, until they know for sure how much corn China actually is going to buy.
Yeah, well, turn your attention back to the local side. Cash basis locally been strong?
Corn basis has been extremely strong. You know, even though there's plenty of old crop corn, with this sell-off in the futures market the last 3 to 4 weeks, that's dried up the farmer selling. So corn basis continues to be strong. Bean basis continues to be red hot. Some of the processors that were, you know, slight double digits over now are paying 30 over, and we've heard some stories of 35 to 40 over the nearby futures month. So basis continues to be extremely strong.
This is something we really kind of expect.
This is WILL AM and FM. I'm Tom Rogers with a severe weather watch. The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for portions of central Illinois and central Indiana until 10 o'clock tonight. That includes in our severe weather coverage area Champaign, Coles, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for storms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye for threatening weather conditions and stay tuned to WILL for the latest weather information and possible warnings. Severe thunderstorms can and occasionally do produce tornadoes. Again, a severe thunderstorm watch is now in effect for portions of central Illinois and Indiana, including Champaign, Coles, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Livingston, Logan, Macon, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion counties until 10 o'clock tonight. Stay tuned for further information.
Yeah, so do you think producers will be willing to sell corn 10 to 15 cents higher? You said they would, but
I think
how much?
Yeah, I think both old crop, well, number one, they have to finish getting rid of the old crop corn first.
Right.
And then number two, they probably need to get, you know, up to two-thirds of their new crop corn sold. And I don't think most people are more than a third sold. So we can see another, you know, pretty good wave of selling both old crop and new crop on another 15-cent rally.
Would you think, Greg, that the expectation is that this will follow a seasonal pattern once we get through June and into July and August, that things might get really ugly for a little bit, or are we down at lows far enough here that we might settle an early low in the place?
Well, I if we rally 15 cents, then we can lose quite a bit and still not set new lows for this move. But the crop looks awful good. If China does not buy much more corn between now and when we know what the pollination outcome is, yeah, then I think we can make new lows.
Okay, and your bids for the day are?
Cash corn, 344, new crop, 345, cash beans, 956, new beans, 881, and new crop wheat, 426.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Joins us on a Monday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In just a couple of minutes, the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, up on the 23rd floor of the Boeing Building in downtown, will join us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com. Support for agricultural programming comes from the Westchester Group, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is at westchester-auctions.com or at 800-607-6888.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. The folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, are with us to take a look at that. Mark Russo joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mark. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fine, Todd. Thanks.
Tell me just a bit about the weather forecast. It's been really wet. Look out over the weekend. Tell me what that looked like this past weekend, and then look ahead, too, please.
Yeah, well, Midwest continues to be in an active pattern, which has been the pattern here really so far in June, especially during the past week or so. Specifically over the weekend, we saw widespread shower and thunder shower activity, some heavy at times, and basically swaths across portions of the Midwest, including in that is portions of Nebraska, southern Iowa, northern Missouri, and then parts of central Illinois, extending eastward to Illinois into Indiana and Ohio. Bottom line here is that this pattern here continues as we go through the next week to 10 days, as overall we see more of these systems here tracking through and frequent rain development across sections of the Midwest, and even for that matter in portions of the plains, especially especially what's going on right now in portions of the southern plains. It does look like as we get beyond the next week or 10 days that things ease a little bit further north. That still would keep the Midwest in a generally active zone, although your higher totals would likely be biased more north compared to what they are right now. But overall, it's a pretty active pattern across the Midwest. Now, down south in the areas of the Delta, while the Midwest here is seeing well above normal rainfall totals, the Delta has seen deficient rainfall in most areas over the past several weeks. So depending on what specific crop area you look at, you have quite a range of weather conditions.
Yeah, it is quite a range. How about if you look overseas at the Chinese crop for me and tell me how they're progressing? They had a rough start.
They did have a rough start here, Todd. Things have improved here in recent weeks as we saw drier conditions and warmer temperatures across much of eastern China. That dry trend here in recent weeks actually began to be talked about last week, with it beginning to turn detrimental in some portions of China, but that is beginning to turn around this week as an increase in rainfall occurs. We are seeing at least somewhat cooler temperatures compared to late last week. Saw high temperatures in their corn and bean belt climbing up into the mid to upper 90s for several days, but now cooler temperatures working their way in. So it's an improved situation here across China. At this time, no major issues, but that's certainly their crop development here is a little bit lagging here just due to the late planting that occurred back in May.
Okay, so we're having a problem with wheat in North America. Maybe we better take a look at the wheat crop in Ukraine, France, and India.
Yeah, we saw an improvement in rainfall across France, and overall the European crop is in much better shape. Russia and Ukraine, those areas of winter wheat here actually got a little boost of moisture in May for winter wheat prospects, but have dried out recently, and so that could be an issue here for spring wheat produced in those areas.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
And that's Mark Russo. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Monday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Stay with us if you can for the farming world. Otherwise, we'll bid you adieu for the day. You can always hear it at willag.org.
Possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason with you this afternoon to take up the subject of crop insurance. Last week, the United States Department of Agriculture and the RMA released the latest SRA. That's how they figure the way crop insurance agents and companies are paid. On the phone line with us today to talk a little bit about that is Tom Sell of the Crop Insurance Professionals Association in Washington, D.C. Tom, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Todd, happy to be on.
Tell me first, who do you represent as a Crop Insurance Professional Association?
Yeah, Crop Insurance Professionals is a nationwide group of agents, really kind of some long-serving, dedicated agents from around the country. It's a relatively small group, but some of the top professionals in the business, folks who originally gathered wanting to just bring kind of a higher level of ethics and quality to the service that they provide. So it's really a great old group and have been very engaged in this SRA process as well as farm bill, farm policy, those type of things. So
are they primarily independent agents and not then the companies that they represent?
That's right. That's right. So they're independent agents. A lot of farm credits are involved as well, as they've taken an increasing role in the delivery and agencies delivering crop insurance. A lot of the companies, though, are good supporters of SEPA as well. But really, the organization is industry focused, and therefore, you know, it's guys who sit across the table from guys and gals who sit across the table from the producers and are very focused and intent upon what serves their customers the best. So that's kind of the angle that they've taken in this. And of course, in these negotiations on this SRA, that negotiation is between the federal government, of course, RMA, the Risk Management Agency, and the companies, the 16 companies that have a contract to deliver crop insurance for the federal government.
And so SRA stands for Standard Reinsurance Agreement.
Well done.
Well, I'm reading it. but I do have it in front of me, and I do understand some of it. And it is the way that crop insurance companies and agents both, would be paid to deliver crop insurance products to producers. I guess on the other end, if I'm sitting across the table from one of those agents, I would think of it, roughly speaking, as the premium. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, it is in some ways. You know, back in 1980 is when really crop insurance was took its kind of new form of being a public-private partnership. You know, prior to that, we've had crop insurance of sorts since the 30s. But it was always just run by the federal government, and of course, prior to 1980, it never went very far, never became very popular. It was fraught with kind of fraud and abuse. So in 80, they said, you know, we think we can do this better if we engage private industry that is obviously well practiced and accomplished in the delivery of insurance. Of course, private crop hail was established at that time, so they negotiated this financial arrangement whereby some risk would be shared. But then the companies would have to deliver kind of this crop insurance product, which is rated by the USDA, to any comers, to producers who walk in the door, and it's been that kind of financial arrangement. It's been redone several times through the years. The last time was 5 years ago, and so that's currently the process that we're in on this SRA, and so those financial arrangements are with the company, and then the company would contract with agents. Largely independent agents to actually deliver and compete for the farmer's business, and of course a lot of that money comes out of premium. But the way that the government sets premiums, it's supposed to be at a 1-to-1 loss ratio. So they rate it so that the producer gets the best possible deal on his crop insurance, or theoretically that's the way it's supposed to happen. And then the government also pays what's called an A&O subsidy, an administrative and operating subsidy, to the companies to allow for the delivery. You know, most lines of insurance, the companies will set the rates, and they'll build in some delivery costs into those rates. So crop insurance is a little bit different in that the rates are supposed to be just at 1-to-1, i.e. dollar comes in premium, dollar over time is supposed to go out in indemnity. And then there's a separate A&O administrative and operating subsidy that's paid to the companies, and that largely pays commissions and adjuster fees and those type of things. So pretty complex animal, but certainly important to the farm safety net these days, really in many ways, crop insurance has kind of become the integral part of the farm safety net. It's the one thing that producers can really count on. So it's become an increasingly talked about, argued about, and an increasingly important part of the farm safety net.
Okay, so last week USDA released what it called a final draft of the SRA. Does that mean it's open for a comment period?
It is. There's a period of time, and you know, this it is theoretically a negotiation, you know, so what I told folks is I've never sat across a negotiating table from anyone who doesn't say that their latest offer is their final offer. That's simply good negotiating tactics. But you know, what's surprising is there were a number of new concepts put forward in this third draft, what they're calling the final draft, and so it really merits some real scrutiny and talk as we go forward. So, and those talks are starting to begin again between the companies and the RMA.
The official press release says it'll generate $6 billion in savings, $4 billion for deficit reduction, $2 billion to go to other types of critical farm programs. I think most are believing that that might be into CSP or something for conservation. But you tell me what you see there, and then we'll talk about it. And what are the things that showed up that you didn't know about?
Well, it's pretty tough medicine to start with. You know, a $6 billion cut to the delivery, and these are largely cuts. They shouldn't. We should say first of all, they're not. They would not affect farmers directly. So that's a good thing. From a farmer's perspective, he should still be able to go in and buy crop insurance at the same rates, same level of assistance or premium subsidy, and go forward. But that $6 billion, therefore, comes out of the delivery mechanism for crop insurance, the companies, the agents, the adjusters, those type of things. And that $6 billion cut is about a 20 to 25% cut. So you can imagine the prospect of doing, you know, if you're a small businessman running one of these agencies or companies, what kind of impact that's going to have. That comes on top of cuts made in the 2008 Farm Bill, cuts of about $6.4 billion. Back then in the 2008 Farm Bill. So right on the heels of that cut comes this. You know, that's some pretty tough medicine for anyone. The concern has been, even though this doesn't affect the farmer directly, how is it going to affect the overall delivery infrastructure and our ability to provide the same quality level of service and timely type of service that crop insurance has really become famous for. So it's difficult in that respect.
Wait, go back for me, because you said a 20 to 25% cut, but that's not what the press release says. The press release says they're dropping you from, I don't know, 17% to about 14.3 or thereabouts, I think. And this comes from an outside agency, Milliman and Company Incorporated, that they thought that a reasonable return was 12.7%. So maybe you can talk about, so what's the difference between the 25% cut that you just told me about and what I see as potentially just a 3% cut?
Yeah, that's a great question, Todd. And there are a lot of moving parts, and it's a complex program. What they're talking about in their press release are the supposed underwriting gains, which companies have made. And so they're trying to set a level at what they think would be an appropriate underwriting gain. Underwriting gains are, of course, what's left over at the end of the year if premiums exceed the payout. And, of course, you know, RMA is the one that dictates premiums by the rates that they set. But that statement as to the percentage theoretical kind of gain at the end of the year is what they were targeting in terms of the risk sharing, the financial arrangement on the risks and how those are shared between the federal government and the companies. You know, truth be told, the federal government's actually made more on those underwriting sides than the companies, but they've spent a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of press in saying that the companies have been making too much money. One thing that SEPA has said in regards to that is if your argument is that there's too much money in the system, that crop insurance companies are making too much money, then one thing you ought to look at is the rating. You know, USDA is the one that sets the rates, determines how much premium is going to be paid in by the farmer. You know, then it's just the company's job to go out there and sell it the best they can. Well, if USDA is arguing there's too much money in the system, then they ought to look at the rates. That ought to be evidence that perhaps the rates are too high. Of course, the other thing that we just got to consider is it's hard to predict. You know, the companies have made some good returns in the last few years, but you know, Lord willing, this is not the case. But you know, this could always be the year when things go south, and of course, that's why we have crop insurance, so that some of those risks can be shared. It limits the government's overall exposure. It gets these private companies involved and the private reinsurance markets involved. So, you know, there are reinsurance markets all over the world that are partaking in the risk that the U.S. farmers face. That's kind of a cool thing in a couple of senses, but importantly, it limits the federal government's overall exposure on crop insurance. So, you know, it's a complicated animal. Your question was this, you know, how does that $6 billion cut equate to a 20 to 25%? Well, the total delivery expenses, what the CBO or what the Congressional Budget Office or OMB, the Office of Management Budget, assumes is going to be spent in crop insurance is about $2.5 billion a year, about $25 billion over the 10-year window. So a $6 billion cut to that $20 to $25 billion spending is roughly a 20 to 25% cut. So it is pretty deep and pretty tough to swallow.
How does the government or Milliman and company come up with a different set of numbers so differently, though?
Well, it's just different in the sense that it's only looking at one piece of that, one portion. And what Milliman's looking at is the underwriting gains and the subsidies that are tied to that through the federal government are kind of a complex animal, too. So, you know, they're saying, whereas the companies have over the last 10 years made X percent of gain, and I think you said it was 17%, they're trying to lower, through this arrangement, they're trying to mine more money out of the back end, out of the companies, take money out of the companies, so that return on investment or that net gain for the companies would be in the 14% range. So, you know, those percentages, that 17 down to 13 would obviously be a percentage cut. But then when you add that to what they're taking out of the A&O side, the administrative and operating side, together, that's where you get the $6 billion cut.
Yeah, I saw some things that came in from a couple of crop insurance dealers that we work with here at the radio station that have been making their way through the crop insurance agency system. And they wondered why agriculture in this case, as they said agriculture, is the first one to step up to the table, and usually they are, to do deficit reduction. Are you in the same boat there?
You know, I do a lot of work in various areas of agriculture, and you know, I'll say, first of all, Todd, we're in a mess with respect to the federal government and our overall deficit and debt picture. You know, $1.9 billion deficit this year, so something's got to change. Unfortunately, they do always seem to come to agriculture. Ag is actually the one bright spot on that horizon, you know, where we've actually saved a lot of money for the taxpayers relative to what we expected to spend over the last 10 years. We're about $30 billion in surplus, and yet they keep coming back. And I hear the who in the background, so perhaps it's time to go. But
only for a little bit. Hey, Tom, can you stay with us? Because we have another 6.5 minutes to fill.
You bet.
All right, I'll let you go for the moment, but stay on the line. We'll be back with you in just a bit. You are listening, of course, to The Farming World here on Illinois Public Media. Tom Sell of SEPA will join us again in just a couple of minutes.
It's National Strawberry Shortcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1834, Cyrus Hall McCormick patented his reaping machine. In 1854, Towned Glover was commissioned as the first U.S. federal entomologist. He was selected as a, quote, expert for collecting statistics and other information on seeds, fruits, and insects in the United States. His first report was printed that same year. In 1884, New York became the first state to pass laws requiring the burying of utility wires in any incorporated city over 500,000 people. In 1938, Dr. Benjamin Gruskin received a patent for chlorophyll as a therapeutic agent for use in treatment of infection of the bloodstream and for open cuts and wounds. In 1972, the Environmental Protection Agency banned DDT in the U.S., and in 1988, peanut butter sandwiches saved the day. Students in a school were kept in an extra 45 minutes by a 6-foot black bear that had wandered onto the playground. They kept it at bay by tossing out peanut butter sandwiches until the game warden arrived to take the bear away. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today is Tom Sell. He is a spokesperson for CEPA, that stands for the Crop Insurance Professionals Association in Washington, D.C. We're talking about the standard reinsurance agreement that RMA issued a final draft on last week. RMA, of course, the Risk Management Association from the United States Department of Agriculture. Enough with the alphabet soup. Back to Tom Sell. Thanks, Tom, for staying with us. Hey, I've got a question for you. I bet there will be a lot of misinformation that is out and about this and the impact it might have on producers, especially in the I states, Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, parts of the Midwest. You told me up front that the SRA itself really probably would not have an impact. Is that correct or not?
Well, it's designed for the farmers not to. So, you know, farmers participate in crop insurance and they receive, assistance on the premium. All those things stay the same. So what's really being impacted here is the delivery infrastructure. So this is the contract between USDA and the companies who have a contract to deliver the crop insurance to the producers. So in terms of direct impact, i.e. how much will Farmer X have to pay for his corn policy for next year at a certain rate, should be no impact there. The impact is going to be on the delivery mechanism.
Yeah, so it doesn't reconfigure in some way crop insurance so that producers in outlying states, the Dakotas, Kansas, other places might have better opportunity because they have greater risk generally than the three I states do.
They do. They do, and there was some what USDA referred to as rebalancing in this, i.e. trying to structure where the profit centers for crop insurance are going to be. And they tried to move some of that to the outer states to try and improve the level of service there. But, you know,
I get it. I was misunderstanding it. So really it's the crop insurance agents in those states that might stand to benefit and the I states which might stand to suffer. Is that a better...
Well, I don't think any company or agent can look at this, what's on the table here, and say that any area is going to benefit. But certainly, if you look at the area that might take the biggest hit in terms of the infrastructure, it's the Midwest. And it is frustrating. You know, before the break, you were asking about, why ag always has to kind of take the lumps. And it is the one kind of bright area of the federal budget where we've saved money.
It's 2:55. I'm Tom Rogers with the severe weather warning. The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Iroquois County and east central Illinois, as well as Benton County in Indiana, until 4:45 Eastern, 3:45 this afternoon for about another 50 minutes. About 5 minutes ago, Weather Service Doppler radar indicated a severe thunderstorm capable of producing quarter-size hail and damaging winds in excess of 60 miles an hour. It was located near Dunnington in Illinois and moving east at 30 miles an hour. The locations impacted include Fowler, Barst, Lochiel, Atkinson, Templeton, Boswell, and Oxford, many of those areas in Benton County of Indiana. Again, a severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Iroquois County in our severe weather coverage area, as well as Benton County in northwest Indiana, until 3:45 this afternoon, 4:45 Eastern. Stay tuned to WYLL for more weather information.
Another frustration is just, you know, when you have the administration and you have Congress looking at doing small business tax credits and breaks and stimulus packages and all these type of things to, you know, they like to talk about creating jobs in rural America. But then they, on the other hand, through this SRA, you know, where you're looking at a 20 to 25% cut in the delivery infrastructure, you know, that's going to have a real impact on jobs and these rural communities.
What are the reading lists you suggest people take a look at, and where do they find them? And you can do online. Most of our listeners are pretty well connected, and they're capable of getting online and taking a look at products.
So the question was, where can folks find good information on this?
Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll be able to go to USDA RMA and look up crop insurance and see what they have to say. But where else should they go?
You know, certainly one would be our organization has a good website. It's called www.cipatoday.org. And then really the leader in the industry is called the National Crop Insurance Services, NCIS, which can easily be Googled. I don't have it right in front of me, but easy to Google and find good quality information from the companies. And, you know, these are private companies that are dynamic and competitive. You know, they do a great job of generating information, just like they do a great job of generating sales and delivering these products to the producers. So those are a couple of resources. But you know, admittedly, it's a complex topic, and you know, I guess the fear from the beginning was that this was not so much about a negotiation, but about the administration wanting to mine some more money out of the crop insurance program and out of rural America, and it's just a challenge from that aspect.
Tom, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, we appreciate your time. Tom Sell is a spokesperson for CIPA. That stands for Crop Insurance Professionals Association out of Washington, D.C. You can visit them online at www.cipatoday.org, I believe. Just look them up, Crop Insurance Professionals Association. You've been listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.